of the NB2 Comic Review. I am Adam Buckfusco, your host of the show. Joined with me today is, of course, Sequoia Winston, the kind of co-host of the show. How are you doing?
I'm all right, man. How are you doing?
Doing well. You can also catch Sequoia at Geek and Drink.
Geeks Who Drink.
Sorry.
Monday nights, I'm Fitzgerald's in Chapel Hill, and Thursday nights at Brewmasters in Raleigh. So, yeah.
A lot of fun.
It's enjoyable. It's damn enjoyable. It's fast-paced.
Yeah. Come on out.
Fun. You know, it's just a little pub quiz. That's a way to show off how smart you are. So come and see me, support me. So thank you.
Well, tonight we actually have not one but two guests. We have Jason Leonard, who is our resident horror collector and enthusiast. How are you doing, Jason?
Doing good, man. Doing good.
Yeah?
Yeah.
You awake?
Yeah.
You ready?
Ready to go.
It's your podcast debut, man.
Yeah.
First
My
one
virgin.
Ever. Yeah. Welcome to it. you're not the only virgin here tonight.
That's not true.
Our other guest here is Daniel Herzog.
Hello.
And you are not only a horror enthusiast, but actually worked on a horror movie.
I did work on a horror movie.
That's right. And with that being said, if you haven't figured it out, this is the NB2 horror special.
It is.
Because horror transcends film and into comic books as well.
Now, I was going to say, is there any relation to Werner Herzog?
Director. I think you asked about the book on my desk at work.
He's got a thick book by that guy. That's my grandfather.
No, it's not. I'm not. I don't think I'm related to him at all.
You could be. Distant cousins.
I hope so. Yeah.
So, gathered all today to... actually, Sequoia had pitched me this idea about doing... You know, it's October.
Yes.
Wind's getting a little crispy. The leaves are starting to change colors. Maybe.
Getting a little darker. I'm feeling a little unsafe walking to my car after work. So, terror is in the air.
Get your pepper spray. So why not do an episode of the show kind of talking about comics and horror and, you know, the things that have become new from that genre. Let's kind of get into it. We're going to put the capes and cowls, you know, on the mantle and pick up the hockey masks and chainsaws. If I had an awesome chainsaw sound effect, I would play. There you go. What is the root of horror? Why is horror such a impactful genre to an audience? What is it that we love about bloodlust and gore and monsters and ghosts? What is it that, you know, calls to you guys?
People just like being scared, man.
Yeah,
I mean, people just like that shock value.
Yeah.
And that's the way I look at it anyway.
It's the stakes are raised. Yeah, I mean, you know, there's always something to be afraid of out there. And you know, horror movies, horror comics, anything horror related just takes the stakes and just raises them to like absurd levels. And, you know, you've got something invested in the characters. I think people watch the movies to sharpen their own survival skills. I mean, it's like, you know, old fairy tales. You know, people would tell scary stories to each other to teach them how to keep themselves safe.
Do you feel like there's a hint of role playing in every horror experience where you're watching a movie and you yourself are putting, you know, yourself in that scenario, trying to figure out what you would have done different to survive the scenario? Is there like a game that the viewers are playing?
I ran.
And it seems like in a lot of horror movies, it just seems that it's so formulaic in terms of like how people actually react to situations. Mm-hmm. Like, don't go up the stairs or don't go in the dark basement. But they always, you know, they always do. But I don't know, until I'm in a situation like that, I don't think that's how I'd react.
Right.
You know what I mean? So I think for me, like, a horror movie is finding the realism, and it's almost like a drug to me, because I want to find a movie's like, what movie's going to stress me out and just like kind of keep me on the edge of my seat, or a movie that I have to end up watching something light and fun afterwards so I can go to sleep.
Right.
So I'm not worried about something coming out of the, you know, the shower while I'm going to the bathroom or, you know, whatever
it
is.
Right. The
it's like the chase.
You need stupid people in order to make horror movies happen, because I think, you know, most people are too sensible to not play with the Ouija board or, you know, do something to rattle up some ghost or like mess around with some, like, I don't know, serial killer, axe murderer. You know, folks are far, well, I shouldn't say folks are far too sensible, but you need dumb people. Because if it wasn't for people doing stupid stuff, then you wouldn't have there'd be no story.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
A lot of it, you know, as far as the movies go, these, like he was saying, like these killers, they're just as iconic as some of the, you know, superheroes in comic books.
Right.
Michael Myers, Jason Voorhees. People could just go to see them.
Yeah, I never really thought about it, but they are kind of foils to the capes and cowls. Yeah. I mean, you know, they don their masks, yeah. They have their weaponry, they create a legend and a mythos, same as Batman or Superman would. Right. Just instead of saving everybody's ass, they're
killing everybody.
Exactly. With that being said, has there been any comics that you guys have come across that you really felt actually kind of startled you or bothered you, or you could like see this as like more than just, you know, the comic pages? Did it ever like interact with you?
Come on, man, here's your pitch.
Did you ever read a comic, go to bed and have a nightmare about it? That's what I want to know.
I've never had a nightmare over a comic. Yeah, I sleep pretty well.
No. Yeah. Honestly, I hadn't read a lot of horror comics lately. Honestly, I mean, I read Walking Dead.
Right.
But, you know.
But what about Walking Dead appeals to you?
Actually, it's the cast, you know, Rick and his group.
And the characters.
Yeah, the characters.
Which is interesting, too, because with most horror movie stuff, the characters don't really get much of a development.
Right.
You know, you may have the scared little girl who becomes the, you know, warrior at the end. And that's pretty much the most development you're going to get out of these characters. So when Walking Dead came around, even though it became a soap opera and a, you know, who's going to die next scenario, they had enough time, both in comic form as well as TV form, to evolve as characters and make you actually care about when they die, opposed to, say, like a Scream movie or a Jason Voorhees movie where it's just their cannonball folder. They're just there to die, and you know that going into it.
Yeah, you get invested in these characters.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, come attached to them pretty much. And like you said, you're just sitting around waiting to see who gets the axe next. So.
And what's interesting is that even if your favorite character dies, you still keep reading. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, they have enough new characters to fill that void as quick as they create them.
What about you, Daniel? You got any horror comics that you like? Or not? I don't mean to put you on the spot.
I don't even know why I'm here. I kept telling Adam, I don't even really.
You know why you're here.
Adam educates me about comics. Every morning we get to work and he'll tell me about this, and I just listen. I'm fascinated about it, but I don't really. I'm super into horror movies, but I don't. Like, I love Walking Dead, but it was after Walking Dead that I was like, oh, let me read the comic and let's see, because the people around me were like, oh, you know, like, they took this out, or it's so much better in the comic and this and that. But I think, like, what I love about the comics, I was thinking about this, was that, like, comics or even books, people always say, oh, the book is better than the film or whatever. And that's always the case because they can get into detail. And, like, comics, it's like, Everything is right there, and if you just do it right, you can make a great movie, and then people kind of mess it up. But I feel like Walking Dead, I mean, from someone that went from the show to reading the comic, that it is very, like, well done. You do care about all of these people because you've had time, and you don't have to like all of them. Like, there's certain characters I hate, and you're like, I just want them to die, or whatever.
Yeah,
but
even in
like mainstream horror movies that have no, you know, no like book based on them or whatever, you can always relate. You can be like, I want that girl to die, whether it's some personal reason because it's someone you can relate to, or what it is. I think it's just like, I think just the feeling that it gives you, like what kind of emotions it'll rise from you.
Let's see. And you sit there and go, I don't, you just asked me to be here, but you have the unique experience to say that you not only worked on, but edited a movie that was, you know, taken from an actual horror comic. You worked on Steve Niles' Remains.
Yeah.
But so, you know, I kind of want to bring you on the show and kind of talk to you about, like, you know, you said that they had given you a copy of Steve Niles'
Remains. Yeah. Well, this is what I'll give you a real quick backstory. So they had done another film 2 years before this film. So I did this film 3 years ago, and a couple years before that, they had hired me to do another film, but their financing fell apart. So they're like, oh, we can't pay you. Anyway, I'm on my way to Boston Airport because I was going to Russia to do work. And I get a phone call from the producer of the movie. He goes, hey, do you want to come on and do this movie? It's over the summer. It's like 2 months. I was like, yeah, that sounds awesome. I was like, but I can't talk to you right now. I'm about to get on my plane. He's like, all right, call me when you get back. So I talked to him and the director on the phone, and they're like 30 minutes from my house. And I said, well, what do you want from me? They're like, well, do you watch The Walking Dead? And The Walking Dead was, I think it was still in its first or second season or whatever. And it was super, you know, super popular. Well, we want to do something like that. I was like, well, what's this based on? They're like, oh, it's Steve Niles. He wrote this comic, this graphic novel. But they're like, no, it was more like they wanted more of like The Walking Dead kind of like style in terms of like the longer takes and that kind of stuff. Now, I forgot what you even asked me and why I even said all of that.
Well, so Steve Niles, for the listeners, was also the writer of 30 Days a Night and some various other horror genre style comics.
See, the one he just did that Monsters and Mad Men, didn't he?
I think so.
I think he did.
You said that they sent you a copy of the graphic novel.
Yep.
And did you use that source material to kind of help edit and pace the movie? And
I think initially I did. I remember like going through it, and I was like, oh, this is like, you know, the story, like this, the pictures were really good, and I was really into that. But it was like once the footage started coming in, I was like looking at it, I was like, okay, I guess I try to kind of replicate what they were looking for like in terms of like The Walking Dead kind of style, but that's not. It's not how the movie really turned.
You can only, as an editor, you can only work with what content was given.
Yeah,
to you.
No, it's not. No, and it was all very good, but it wasn't. I think I might have had different expectations, like just because of how the comic was and how they were pushing the whole like, oh, we're going for like The Walking Dead thing and this and that. So,
did you ever get around to watching 30 Days and Nights?
Yeah, I love that movie.
Did you kind of feel like it worked? Your movie worked alongside it, that it had a very different feel to it.
I mean, first of all, like what 30 Days a Night, I think is that a Dimension film or
I believe so. Yeah.
Or Dark Horse or Dark House, Sam Raimi's
Ghost
company.
House.
Ghost House, Sam Raimi's company. Yeah. So, I mean, you have that, and this is through a smaller company, and it's distributed through Chiller, strictly through Chiller TV. Yeah. And Chiller, I consider Chiller definitely a little better than sci-fi. Sci-fi, they pump out, what, 2 movies a month, and it's always morphing different crazy... No, obviously, you see how budgets work. You see, like, okay, 30 Days a Night was probably, like, $20, $30 million. This movie was $1 million.
Right.
But in terms of that, no, I was proud of what I worked on. I thought it was good. It was very well put together for the time constraints. I knew, being on the inside, knowing where they were like filming and all of that, I knew that they were dealing, you know, they shot most of it at this hotel in Mystic, Connecticut, where they make all the world's submarines, and that hotel kept getting shut down by the town because they weren't paying their electric bill. So they're dealing with that, so they're paying their debts for them to keep this movie going. And there were so many problems just making this movie, and it was awesome. Like when it like came together and I actually got to see it, I was like, I'm like, there was a lot of hard work that went into that. I'm proud the way it came out. And I've seen a lot of movies that should be better that are not, like Transcendence.
Well, no, I remember distinctly when the first issue of that book came out, like reading something about how it was supposed to be a movie and just kind of waiting, you know, like quite a few years before actually seeing anything actually come out of production.
Yeah.
You know, because I think like he had something optioned from the get-go, because I think when the book came out, me and Jason were talking about this earlier, there was that time period where there was like this huge scramble from like various comic book publishers to like put out Yeah. Like horror-based comics. Yeah. Like everybody was buying up properties because we were like trying to rattle them all off. Because
Wildstorm.
Wildstorm had like
what years was this?
This was 2004 to early 2000s. Probably 2007.
Okay.
Yeah, that was 30 Days a Night was the thing that really launched IDW to prominence, and like Remains was, I guess, sort of the follow-up book by Steve Niles, and I remember there was a definite like, hey, this is going to get made into a movie. And I was like, all right, I might check that out. And like, I didn't hear anything until like just one night randomly, like going through my Netflix streaming queue, and it's like, it's on there. Yeah. Okay, you know,
I think initially it was supposed to be, it was going to be a bigger budget film, and I'm trying to, they had a meeting about it, and they talked about, there was somebody I think that was attached, and then it fell apart, and then Chiller, was owned by Universal. I think maybe Universal might have owned it, and then Chiller kind of took over.
Well, Universal did 30 Days a Night, right?
If that's the big company, you have them, and then you have Ghost House. I think so. I'm not 100%. But, Universal owns Chiller, and I think they own Sci-Fi now, too.
Yeah, they do.
So, and then, I think it just got passed down. They're like, all right, let's just do, like, kind of a... I think that was the first Chiller original. Because Chiller does a lot of originals now because they saw that Sci-Fi was doing really well, but we all know about Sci-Fi.
Really? They saw Sci-Fi was doing well.
Right.
Because those Sci-Fi, like what I learned about working on this movie, I learned a lot about like how Chiller operates, how Sci-Fi operates. And Sci-Fi, they have 24 original program movies in their schedule for a year. So there is a bunch of different production companies all over the world. I think Roger Corman. I think he does a lot of the sci-fi movies. He produces, his company does a lot of those because they shoot for like 6 weeks and they can get them out really quick.
See, I grew up on horror movies and stuff like that, but I kind of had a bit of a falling out with . So, like, I'm not as in the loop. This guy right here probably keeps me a little bit more up to date with stuff. But, like, I stopped watching horror movies back, like, when my sister passed away. Because it was just one of those things where I was just like, oh, my God, I can't enjoy this.
Yeah.
But the thing that got me back into them, because I think she passed away around October 2001. But, for like a whole year, I like just swore off horror movies. And then a buddy of mine took me to go see, I can't remember if it was 28 Days Later. I might be wrong about when it came out. It was either 28 Days Later or like, no, Zack Snyder's Dawn of the Dead. That was the
2004.
Movie. That was, okay. So it was a few years then I swore off horror movies. Yeah. I saw that. And I was just so wowed by it. I was like, man, that is good.
Yeah,
man.
I think that was, I'm trying to think what was before. I think 28 Days Later was around that same time.
28 Days Later came out, I want to say it had something to do around the time The Walking Dead comic came out, which was, I believe, 2001?
Walking Dead was 2001.
And then...
And 28 Days Later was 2003, I think.
And wasn't there something about, like, the scripts and the comics were so similar in that?
What's the whole thing with Rick?
Rick waking up in the hospital and Scarecrow, what's the guy's name?
Killian Murphy.
Killian Murphy waking up in the hospital.
With his dick hanging out. That was so unnecessary.
He's Irish. That's how they
get down. Butt naked in the hospital.
It's funny you bring that up because when I watched 20 Days Later is one of my favorite. I love Danny Boyle, the director. I think that guy can do no wrong. In that first scene where you see him in the, you see Killian Murphy and then watching Walking Dead, I turned to my buddy, I go, they just ripped off 28 Days Later. But now, like, saying that they kind of are around the
same,
they're
so close
earlier,
that a lot of people debate on who kind of read what first. I mean,
that whole opening sequence is so similar to Rick, you know, waking up in the hospital trying to figure out, well, what the hell's going on.
Right.
But I mean, I guess from a storytelling standpoint, it makes sense to kind of have your main character totally thrusted into a situation. You skip over the formalities of like how this happened. I mean, you know, get that little info.
It's called
info
RPG storytelling. Every main character wakes up from the world.
I was wrong about that. Walking Dead was 2004. Not 2001.
Okay.
Because this year marked the 10th anniversary.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's
so
right.
2000, so 28 Days Later did come first.
And there was that, what was it? Robert Kirkman, the writer of Walking Dead, had made some joke about, you know, he never saw the show or the book, I'm sorry, to last that long. So he said, you know, by issue 72, they're going to be fighting aliens in space. And, you know, he didn't have a direction originally. So I believe it's issue 72. There's a nice little 4 or 5 page story that's all in color where Rick gets abducted by aliens, wakes up and realizes the whole zombie thing was done by aliens, and Michonne's walking around with a lightsaber chopping up zombie aliens. And it was just a little like throwback to that, you know, that story that he had done, you know, maybe around issue 10. So there's a lot of fun with the Robert Kirkman thing. What are your predictions for the next season of the show? Do you think it's going to stay close to the comics? Do you think it's kind of going to go off more on its own direction?
I think a little bit of both.
Yeah.
It looks like they're going to go into that Hunter storyline, the cannibals. And but I think it'll veer off into its own direction. I don't think, you know, it hadn't since... It hadn't stuck to the comic books in any of the seasons, really.
Well, I mean, they definitely took parts.
Yeah,
Like the scene with the two little girls was done in the comic first, but they were two little boys. They were twin brothers. Right. So it definitely, somebody on set's reading the book.
Yeah.
And I believe Kirkman's one of the main influences.
He's the executive producer.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, like you said, you get the best of both worlds. I mean.
Well, and do you think it's good that they create their own storyline, or would you have rather they stay closer to the comic?
No, I wouldn't want to see it just as the comic book is. You know, I wouldn't want to see that.
Right.
You already know what's going to go down. Seeing something different on the show.
Right.
You know, it makes it a little bit more exciting.
Yeah, I think Andrea in the comic is way better than in the show. And if that character had died in the comic, it would be 10 times more impactful than when she died in the show.
I was pulling forward to die in the show.
Which is a shame, because it's like all the female characters are awesome in the book and they suck on the show.
You don't like Carol?
Michonne's cool on the show.
Michonne's about the only one that stayed the same. Carol's gotten better.
Carol was like this woman who had this abusive husband. It seems like she's kind of
Carol on the show has gotten a lot better. Definitely better in the comic book version.
But she gets weird in the comic book version.
Yeah, well, it's that whole in the comic. You know, she's got the whole thing with I always want to Tyrese.
Daryl. Actually, you don't. Do you read? You don't. But no. Daryl's not in the comic, and it's another run-on joke that Robert Kirkman's going to throw him in the comic, and he never does. I don't think he ever will.
It's one of those books, like, I'll read it for a little bit, then I'll kind of go away and then come back, and, you know, like I said, most stuff, Jason keeps me up to date on. But as far as horror comics, man, like, the stuff, the book I'm reading right now that I love is Caliban by Garth Ennis, because, I mean, that guy just has a great sense of just truly horrific stuff. I mean, it kind of gives me the same feeling of, like, watching the original Alien by Ridley Scott. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just, like, a good sci-fi horror story. But prior to that, man, probably, like, the last horror comic I really got into was Crossed. Which was also by Garth Ennis.
This is a nasty bitch. This guy recommends the book, sells the book to a guy. The guy comes back and gives it back to us. Don't even ask for a refund. Nothing. Just give us back the book. What kind of shit you trying to give me, man?
No, because Chavez said it was Chavez, and he said, like, hey, man, you know, love Preacher. And I think he read The Boys, too. And he was like, he really liked Garth Ennis. And he's like, I need something that's real good. I need some. You know, like a good horror comic, you know. And I figured, okay, you want Garth Ennis, some kind of hardcore. You know, like, the most messed up thing I have ever read was that first series of Cross books by Garth Ennis, man. That is some truly disturbing mess. I mean, like, it is just horrific. But it's good. It's terrifying. Like, you know, my thing is, like, trying to read something. Like, if this were to happen, you know, it's just like... We're just fucked. That is good stuff. I don't want to give away too much, though.
Right.
But yeah.
I've actually picked up a couple of horror themed books this year. If you guys are fans of the show Hannibal, or obviously the Hannibal movie franchise, but the new NBC show is intense.
That's what I hear.
Is it's worth your time.
Okay.
Nailbiter is a comic very similar to Hannibal. The publisher even says, if you like Hannibal, if you're digging the show, pick up Nailbiter. The idea is, in this small, remote town, 16 of the world's deadliest serial killers have come from this town. Guy's doing investigating it. He goes missing. So his buddy goes into the town to look for him, teams up with a local female cop, and they're trying to figure out what happened to this friend. So they team up with one of the most sadistic serial killers of the town, the Nailbiter, who not only kills his victims, but he also chews their fingernails off. And that's his big MO. All 16 of the killers have their own signature of gross that they do to perform upon their victims. And each issue kind of goes a little bit more into each killer. And yeah, it's good. It's a fun, dark, scary kind of cop show book. Right.
Okay.
Yeah, I highly recommend that one. Another one is Spread, which is kind of post-apocalyptic, but it's fun.
Yes, I've been reading Spread. That's actually pretty good. Yeah. You know, like another horror movie I like is, and that's the thing. I try to find comic books that have something in common with like the horror movies that I like. And one of my favorite movies is John Carpenter's The Thing.
Oh, okay.
Yes. Classic. Yeah. So I've been enjoying The Spread.
So. I didn't even think about that, but yeah, you're right. It's very close in with the.
But the I mean, thing. But that's the thing with horror comics. I mean, I guess horror. Movies also is that, you know, you just take a very similar premise from something else and it's like, well, it's like this, but then this happens. Like, you always take that germ of an idea and then like add on to it. So it's like, if you can kind of hook me with like, hey, Sequoia, if you like, you know, Friday the 13th, it's like that, but you know,
right?
Yeah,
to give the listeners a little background on Spread, think of kind of the idea of Saga, you know, journeyman on the road with a baby, only that journeyman just happens to be a very Wolverine-like character who's in this frozen wasteland that is being engulfed by red, mutated, nasty, animalistic sludge. And it's just tearing through whatever little existence is left. It's a lot of fun. And it's really, there's some panels, man. There's some spreads that are just really gross.
That last issue with my man getting killed in the, was I didn't expect that.
Spread is up to issue 3, and I think we got plenty of issues around, you know. I think it might be even doing,
we keep selling
third.
Out of it.
Yeah,
and like, we've been ordering pretty good. Like, we keep ordering more and more with each iteration, but yeah, that's been selling pretty well for us.
Well, if you know, it's a common theme, most of these books come from Image and Dark Horse. Marvel and DC don't really go into the horror genre.
No. Like I said before, there was that, I think the most Marvel has kind of delved into it was the Stephen King stuff.
Dark
and then before
Towers.
That, the
Dark Towers.
There was the Anita Blake stuff prior to that, but that's not even, I mean, it's not so much visceral horror as it is just stuff from like horror writers. I mean, the Anita Blake stuff is just like kind of vampire fiction. IDW and Dark Horse.
Yeah.
And Avatar.
An Image.
Oh,
yeah.
Images. So, yeah.
Are the ones who pretty much rock the horror stuff.
The one I'm really looking forward to is Witches.
Witches.
Scott Snyder.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, I guess when is it coming out?
It's got a shitload of variants, man. I didn't realize that.
I think Witches comes out in October.
October, yes.
Yep.
No, I mean, I guess that's the thing. Like, you know, it's almost kind of like I find like sort of the same issue with horror comics as I have with like horror movies. There's like so much stuff out there to choose from. But like, you know, I don't know quite what to pick. You know, it's really hard to decide. Cause I mean, the sad thing about like, you know, trying to rent or like, you know, stream a horror flick, man, it's like, there's so much to choose from. There's a lot of crap you got to wade through.
Sure.
It's like 90% of horror movies, man, are like doo-doo. And it's like trying to find that good 10%.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, cause it is. There's so much garbage out there. I mean, like, take for instance, these, what were they called? Paranormal Activity movie.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they Now you had it was so, how many of them was it?
Oh, we're up to six? Four and a spinoff.
And then the new one's February, I think, comes out.
Really? Mm. It's not coming out?
Yeah, they pushed it. I do not recall why, but.
Well, here's the thing about those movies. Daniel and I actually had conversations about this. The idea is take as little budget as you can do and make a movie that's going to make not three or four times the budget, but like 100 or 200 times the budget. A Paranormal Activity cost, what? The first one cost, what, 20 grand?
It was like 16 grand, yeah.
To make, and then it ended up being a multi-million dollar movie. Yeah.
But it's kind of like what you were talking about before. Like, all horror movies stem from the same thing. So if you have a ghost movie, it's like, okay, it's going to, but it's always, let's, you know, what's a... The whole thing I'm into is when I'm watching a horror movie or any movie, it's like, show me something I've never seen before.
Right.
And if you fail at it, awesome. That's fine. But, like, don't show me the same thing little kids that see ghosts or the ghost is the little kid or, like, trying to do, like, the movie The Others, how, like, oh, the twist at the end. You know what
I mean?
The
Sixth
Sense
kind of
thing. Yeah, and, like, it's so hard to find, like, you know, like a horror movie. You're like, oh, wow. And there's one Adam and I have been talking about I want to watch. It's on Netflix. It's called Rigor Mortis. It's from Hong Kong.
The Chinese hopping vampire.
Supernatural kung fu movie. Yeah. I'm like, it could be horrible, but I'm like, I've never seen something that takes all those genres, puts it together, and it just, you know, like, Chinese cinema is amazing to look at no matter what it is. Yeah.
Well, no, and that's the thing. I mean, like, horror movies, there are always trends.
Right.
Like, you know, if you see one zombie movie, there's like a billion more coming out right behind it.
There's so many zombie movies on
Netflix, yeah. Yeah, so it's like something does well. I mean, like, you know, there's like 40, 50 others, you know, within the same, like, you know, okay, here's like 50 vampire movies. Here are 50, like, haunted house movies. I mean, it's always... You know, it moves in different trends, different waves.
But like Zack Snyder's Dawn of the Dead, like how many times have we seen people running from zombies? But like this was like, oh, okay, this just how he showed us this was so much different than anything we'd ever, you know, ever seen.
Well, see, and going back to that, when they brought back Halloween and they brought back Friday the 13th and they brought back Nightmare on Elm Street, I think.
There we go.
would you like to feel this one, Jason?
The problem is exactly that. They didn't show us anything new. You know, Saw ruined horror movies, in my opinion, because it took the world and desensitized it to a point that a dude running around with a machete and a ski mask just isn't that scary anymore.
It's like, oh, she only got decapitated? You're just, you know, you're
right. Yeah, and what do you... Yeah, you're right. I think you told me the phrase torture porn.
Yeah.
Like,
that's what Saw was. Or... Hostile or anything like that, you know, brutality. You know, just people coming. Oh, it's just this and that. Well, it's fucking suck, man.
Yeah,
I mean, I personally like the first Saw.
Right
after that,
that was one of a kind.
You're like, that was a great movie because you never really seen anything like it. But a horror movie over the past decade that sticks out to me is Trick or Treat.
Oh, Trick or Treat was very good. Yeah, and that was a couple mini stories made.
Yeah, it was an anthology. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that, to me, that was great.
That started off as a comic book.
It was, yeah. It started as a comic. And it was supposed to be a theatrical release.
For like 2 years, I reckon,
and
pushed.
And they were going to have to go up against one of the Saw movies. I think it was Saw 5 or something. So they backed out, you know, and made it a straight to DVD release. And it took 2 years to get it out on DVD. But now they're talking about a sequel,
mm-hmm.
and that actually is going to be a theatrical
release.
This is going to be the first time ever. The first one wasn't, but the second one will be.
That'd be really weird,
That's cool. Crazy.
Actually, anthology horror movies are becoming big, especially on Netflix, with things like VHS and
ABC's of Death.
And I think that's kind of interesting, because it's like, it appeals to a wider audience.
Yeah.
So if like one, you know, 20-minute story doesn't like do it for you, there's two or three more right behind it that may, you know, strike a chord with you.
Yeah, and people can't... The thing is, like, people... We were talking about this, how, like, people, like, friends of mine, they're like, oh, last night's Walking Dead was just so slow. And it's like, it is, but it's... You're developing a story.
You're building up.
Yeah, and, like, and things like the, you know, anthology, ABC's Death or VHS, like, though I love the good story, but at the same time, because we have short attention spans now, so you're like, oh, I'm getting something that's really impactful in 15 minutes, and then I can move on to something, you know what I mean? So you're not losing your focus, which is, I think it's the lower budget thing, I think really works. Like, if you, because I think when you have too much money or whatever, it's like, oh, let's, you know, like this year, how many ghost movies seemed like it came out every week? That you had like Oculus, you had every weekend there was like a different like ghost
The Conjuring,
movie.
Conjuring. Like, I mean, yeah, like I said, it goes back to the whole trend thing. I mean, like, yeah, it's, I guess right now ghost stories are like the new thing. Yeah. Like, ghost stories are starting to slowly edge out. Right? Yeah,
they're very cheap to make, and I think that's the appeal, that you're always going to have a certain demographic that is going to patronize those movies, and you know you can make them for $5 million, $3 million.
Yeah, no, that, I mean, that's true. I mean, but you know, but I think there's still some horror stories out there that deserve like a decent budget. Like, I'm still waiting for the day, you know, Universal or whoever gives Guillermo del Toro however many millions he wants to make at the Mountain of Madness. I'm holding out for a good big budget H.P. Lovecraft story. That's what I want more than anything.
That'd be cool.
Because, I mean, you know, I like that kind of, I mean, you know, Lovecraft is all about the existential horror.
Right.
And I mean, I think that was the thing that kind of disappointed me so much about Prometheus, is that, like, you know, there was really no sense of dread in that movie. Like, it was a beautiful film, but like nothing about it was scary whatsoever. And I feel like, you know, after you get over, you know, the fear of physical harm and stuff like that, it's all, you know, the next thing is mental damage.
Right. The psychological.
Exactly. And I mean, you know, people, oh, it's a psychological horror. It's an exciting thriller. And it's like, no, like Lovecraft, I mean, it's just like, whatever the characters in those stories, what they encounter, like, they are just damaged and ruined after, you know, after those situations. That was one of the things I appreciated about Rob Zombie's second Halloween movie, was that, you know, like the final girl, Laurie Strode, the first movie, like, you just see how messed up she is, you know, from that movie. And I don't recall ever seeing that in any other horror movies, any other horror movie prior to that. Like, I mean, like, she's got a limp, she's scarred up, she's got rods and pins and all her, like, broken bones.
Yeah, well, think about, like, Carol Ann from, like, The Poltergeist. Like, but for everything that she went through, it was just like, oh, she's just little blonde Carol Ann. Everything is good. It's like, you were living on the other side. Like,
yeah. The last horror movie I saw that, I mean, I enjoy this movie, and, like, I just can't watch it because it just icks me out too bad, is The Mist.
Oh yeah,
people love to hate that movie too.
The Mist is so good.
I don't know why.
Like, the one where they're trapped in the grocery
King,
store.
Stephen King's short story.
Thomas Jane.
The supermarket.
Yeah.
Well, a lot of people didn't like the Greek tragedy ending. That was the biggest complaint I had heard.
But it was a nice, alternative end, because I mean the way that book ends is just so open ended and bleak, and it's a good ending, you know, for the short story. But it's like, you know, it's a horrible and bleak ending for the movie. And it's just, how do you top giant squid monsters and, you know, screaming spiders? And I mean, that's, ugh.
A tip for that movie, The Mist, is check it out on Blu-ray. There's an alternate version. Yes. The movie was originally filmed to be a black and white movie.
Really?
So if you look at the way it's shot and you look at the lighting, the alternative version has the black and white version.
It's creepier.
It is creepier. Jeez. It's got a better tone. And what is it? 4 or 5 of the Walking Dead stars got their start.
Because it was Frank Darabont. Yeah.
Right.
Huh.
Okay.
But because whenever I think of that movie, I always think, like, God, if that happened and I was here in this store, I am so. Because at least in the movie, they're trapped in the grocery store.
Right.
And there's food. If I was trapped here, I've got nothing but, like, the bubblegum machine and, like, our nasty toilet water. And I could probably eat a few books as well. But it's like, yeah, no, I don't want. And plus, giant bugs.
Yeah.
Yeah,
like, ugh,
to watch yourself.
I don't like it. I mean, like, okay, but I feel okay. That's something to ask. Like, what is everybody's, like, what is the one horror movie that still sticks with you? Like,
as far as, like,
because we've already said we're immune to horror comics.
As far as what bothers you or messes with you, or what's your favorite, or
messes with you.
Okay, you got to skip me. I'm gonna think about that.
I'd say Pet Sematary.
Really?
Why? Yeah.
Ramones do it for you?
I don't know. I talked about this with my mom recently because that movie came out when I was 8 or 9 years old, and she let me go see that with her and my aunt. And I've always I talked to her about it a few years ago because I think it was definitely horror movies were a lot different back then.
Yeah.
But I was always allowed to kind of watch. My mom was always, she was really into horror. She was a young mom. So she's like, oh, watch this. Watch Nightmare on Elm Street. I taped this for you. And like looking back at like, I'd never let my son, like he'll never watch. He'll see that when he's like 18, you know, but for whatever reason, that movie always stuck, that it always stuck with me. And I would always like, so as I got older, I'm like, let's rewatch it. Let's see how it makes me feel. And there's so many elements that are just so haunting. Like, the sister in the attic, the little boy dying, coming back, the neighbor Judd, him just like
It doesn't help that your son actually kind of looks like that kid too.
But yeah, I don't know. I really don't know what it is, because I haven't really talked to too many other people, you know, about or people that are really like into it or whatever. But between that, like Poltergeist still. I gotta give it
to Poltergeist as the movie that
when the guy's just ripping his face apart and the mat is crazy.
Yeah, mine is definitely Poltergeist. What freaks me out, obviously, like you, I saw it at a young age when I shouldn't have been watching it. Thanks, Dad.
The 80s. Well, for me, it was the 80s. Sorry.
Yeah.
The thing that gets me about it.
The 90s for y'all.
And I thought about it. Most horror movies, especially ghost style movies, it's always the same. New family moves into new home, right?
Mm.
Where they aren't comfortable. You're not comfortable in a new home anyway. With Poltergeist, they lived in that home already.
Right.
They were comfortable. That is their hub, their center of. Yeah. Right. And all of a sudden, something happens, the digging of the pool and all that, and now the place that they deem the safest place they know has become their hell. And that just freaked me out. And the fact that the house looked like anybody's house, the family looked like anybody's family, you know, you start putting yourself, especially being a 7-year-old kid, yeah. You know, like Carol Ann was roughly my age at that time. You internalize that, yeah, and yeah. And like I said, I'm kind of shaken just talking about it, but like it scared the friggin' hell out of me. Well, and it still like kind of does. I mean, it's sunk deep.
There's so many great scenes in that movie. I mean, it hits so many beats. Like, I mean, the friggin' life-size clown doll, the scary tree outside the window,
every childhood fear is brought to life in that movie.
And it's not over. And that, the thing that's great about it, because like I'll watch, I have the old, like the first DVD print of Poltergeist, so it still had all the, you can see all the grit and the grain, which is, and I won't, they have a Blu-ray now, but I'm like, I don't want it to be like clean. I like that, but like the tree thing is so fake looking, but it's, but it works. And the clown thing. Well, because
it reminds you of the tree outside of your own bedroom.
Yeah, and that's what I worry, like the remake, is the tree now going to become animated, like some kind of Lord of the Rings thing?
Right.
Is the clown, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, are the parents even going to smoke pot in the bedroom anymore?
No,
the hell was that about? Like, that's something we can't do anymore.
But I didn't even notice that.
Wait, the mom, was it Mary? Was it the actress who played the mom?
It was the dude the coach.
No, I'm talking about the mom, because she was hot.
Yeah, she was hot. What's her name?
Was it Mary Beth Williams? Mary Jo?
Yeah, Jo Beth.
Jo Beth Williams? Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I hate to say, well, hell, I'll admit it. Yeah, that was the other appeal about horror movies from back in the day. It was hot women.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, but no, I mean, as far as the whole thing with them remaking horror movies, I mean, I think it's fine, you know, because I've seen like the remake of Texas Chainsaw Massacre and Friday the 13th and Nightmare on Elm Street. And, you know, they're not bad movies, but I mean, I realized kind of like with remakes in general, they're not making it for guys like us, you know, who've already seen the movies. They're making
reintroducing
it for
those concepts.
Our younger siblings. Yeah, I mean, they're trying to cash in on the franchise, and it's all about like, oh, hey, 15, 20 year old kid, you know, you've heard of Nightmare on Elm Street, you know, so here's this new version just for you. But no, I mean, it's just like, it's one of those things, like, you know, I couldn't convince, like, Clash of the Titans, I couldn't convince my nieces and nephews to go see the original Harryhausen version, but I can convince them to go see the special effects one with Sam Worthlessington. So, I mean, you know, so, I mean, that's the thing. That's why they do this stuff. Yeah. So, it's just to appeal to a new generation. I mean, the new Friday the 13th, you know, it's great if you've never seen Friday the 13th, or if you've never seen a horror movie at all, like all those things will surprise you if you're not familiar with it. But you know, if you you know, are, if you're familiar with those franchises, like, you, it's nothing you hadn't seen before. But I mean, I'm trying to find, like, you know, as far as the horror movies I watch, like, more original, unique stuff. Yeah. And I mean, like I said, a lot of doo-doo out there, so it's hard to find that really unique stuff.
So what was the one that sank in with you?
Man, okay, like, my moment as a kid, I don't know if it still sinks in with me now, but my sister, I love to death, was supposed to babysit me one mm-hmm. night, and her boyfriend came over and wanted to take her out to a movie.
This just sounds like a horror movie yeah. scenario.
Right there. Like, bloody hook on the car door.
So she locked me in the bedroom.
Yeah, so like, instead of staying home and babysitting me like she was supposed to, she took me with her and her boyfriend to go see this movie called Madman, which was just like a Madman. Knockoff. You know, yeah. So it was just like this knockoff, like, you know, it was all about the summer camp movies.
Okay. Right.
And so it was just like this crazy killer out in the woods, you know, killing drunk, horny, dope smoking teenagers and stuff. But I was like 6 or 7, and like, I saw that, man, and like, it just, you know, I had never seen a horror movie prior to that, so that was my first exposure to that genre. But the thing is, my sisters and my mom, they love that crap, so like, it was something that just built up gradually over the years. Because you talk about your mom, you know, taking, you know, letting you see some stuff
yeah.
you shouldn't have seen. Like, I got taken to the theater to see Predator, you know, age when it was new. And it's like, that is so horribly irresponsible. So, I mean, I saw all types yeah. of crap. Like, they, yeah. no supervision whatsoever, yeah. man. I mean, that's all we watched on the weekends were, like, horror movies. And it's like, everything scared me, or at least freaked me out a little bit, but I kept coming back.
Yeah.
You know, I could not watch it.
It's a thrill. Like, it's definitely, you want that.
Yeah.
And boobies. Yeah. Little boy me want to see.
It's the only way you're going to.
Exactly.
Exactly.
What about you, Jason? You figure it out?
The original Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Yeah.
That's, yeah. yeah that's...
'Cause just, I don't know what it was. I was probably 12 when I first saw that movie. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if it was just the way it was shot. I mean, it just had that look. I mean, it was filmed in Texas on location, and it just looked hot. And, you know, the whole scenario of these kids, like, the sense of dread.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because you knew what was coming. And it was just so realistic, man. I was sitting here watching.
Wasn't it, like, obviously extremely loosely based off a real...
Ed Gein.
Yeah.
Ed Gein, and it was another one, wasn't it?
Ooh.
Yeah.
Or was it a ton of movies? That's all.
I want to say it's Ed Gein, and I think I can't remember the name of the family, but there was this cannibal family in Scotland that would kill people traveling on the road. And, like, that's how they got by for, like, years. Like, it was just, like, killing folks and eating their meat and stuff. Yes. But, I mean, it's funny when you think about, like, how much horror stuff Ed Gein yeah. inspired, from like Texas Chainsaw Massacre to what Silence of the Lambs yeah. to Psycho, which I finally watched for the first time.
The original?
Both, actually. I watched both of them, and I like them both. Same thing with remakes. But the thing is with the original Psycho, like, I just fall to pieces when, you know, Norman comes out in the dress, and it's like, come on, man.
It's so well, the lighting and everything is
the
so
lighting's,
well done.
But it's like, it's that expression on his face that, ah! And he lunges with the knife, and he's got his mom's dress on and that wig, and it's like, you could kill me because I'm crippled with laughter.
And, like, the hype behind that movie, people were horrified. It was considered, like, X-rated and everything else. Yeah.
I'm actually surprised nobody said Stephen King's It.
No.
I think about that anytime my kid's splashing in the puddles. Like, the other day, it's like, rain, he has his boots
Georging!
On. And there was the sewer grate, and he's like, Dada, what's down there? And, like, I always
get
think,
the away from there.
Because I read the book, so I know the kid gets his arms ripped out.
Right.
And I just, like, I think about that. I'm like, oh my God, that's so crazy.
Candyman.
I never got around to that
oh
one.
Oh, my
See, that
God.
That one never bothered me.
It bothered me because it was a black dude in the ghetto killing people. I was like, people who live in the ghetto have it hard enough, Candyman. Stop it. Stop it. And he was killing black folks over a white chick. That is so... It's got so many horrible racist layers. Plus, there's the scene. You don't see it, but they, you know, the lady's telling the story. And, like, you know, the lady's investigating, and, like, in doo-doo on the walls, like, sweets for the... Someone wrote sweets for the sweet. That's disturbing. But, like, the story is some kid, like, some poor autistic kid goes to use, like, the urinal and gets his dick bitten off. That's fucked up. Oh. By Candyman! That is sick!
said, you know, you said what kind of movie left a big impression on us. What was your favorite?
Daniel.
You want me to, what's my favorite horror film? Yeah. It's probably The Shining. And I don't even, I don't even know if I'd consider it like a horror. Yeah. I don't know. That's more, it's very like tonal, yeah. I think. But for, I think when I was a kid, it was for different reasons. And now it's for other reasons. Just the way it's like shot, the score, the Jack Nicholson. I've never,
he was awesome.
But there's so, like, that movie has so many iconic moments. You're just like, just simple things like the little kid riding the three-wheeler and going from the hardwood to the carpet to the hardwood to the carpet, and just the subtleties as just
the twins
and
the hallway.
Yeah, and that movie, I watch that every couple months and it still has the same impact. It's like watching it for the first time.
Did you ever see that documentary Room 237?
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah,
it was
I can't buy into all of those conspiracy theories.
It's
just
it's speculation in an intelligent way. Yeah. You know, if like you're a fan, you listen to it, but like Ab and I talk a lot about conspiracy theory and just in terms of like other things, and I've read a lot of things what they say about like about all the like just the things in the carpet, the symbolism for the like what the carpet meant about really it's the spaceship, and it's him telling the audience I did the space launch in a studio and it's not real, they hired me to do it after they saw 2001 Space Odyssey. So it's like, you know, it's thought-provoking, like, you know, like Prometheus, people love to hate it or they love it, but it's something like people love to talk about it.
Forget Prometheus, man. What about you, B? What's your favorite?
Halloween.
The original.
Carpenter's Halloween.
That one's good, yeah.
That's like the Citizen Kane of horror movies, man.
Why is that to you?
Because I believe it was the first one I ever watched.
Okay.
Yeah, I remember watching it at my sister's house on actually Halloween night. I mean, I was a kid. I was young. Younger than I was when I first saw Texas Chainsaw Massacre. And it just stuck with me, you know, all the Michael Myers did. You know, he was dressed in, you know, black or dark blue. Yeah. And he just had that white mask. Just yeah, it just, that emotionless look, that mask. And I just love that time of year. I love Halloween. I love this time of year. It's just, you know, it just stuck with me.
This is going to obviously date me as to, like, my age and whatnot, but
Final Destination.
No. No, a little bit better than that.
Scream.
Scream.
Oh, get out of here.
Here's the thing, though.
Oh, man.
Scream is, you know, you got your Michael Myers, you got your Jason, but it was real. Like, in the sense that, like, this could happen. Anybody could have done it. Yeah. Anybody could have bought a cheap Halloween costume. It could have been your friend. It could have been, you know,
it made fun
kid
of
down
itself,
the street.
Which was...
Right. It was one of the first horror movies that integrated comedy in fear together. And, you know, those two emotions are linked.
Yeah.
You know, when you get nervous or scared, you know, some people just start laughing. Scream was a pop culture phenomenon. I remember I had the script to Scream, and I would sit there and I would memorize, like, all of Randy's lines and stuff. I loved it. They broke down, you know, the rules of surviving a horror movie. It was, I think, in some ways, kind of like the first anti-horror movie.
Yeah.
And that kind of paved the way for things like Cabin in the Woods, you know, Dale and Tucker versus Evil. Movies that kind of broke the fourth wall.
Yeah. No, definitely Scream. Anytime I'm, you know, watching any horror movie, like, you know, horror movies have that sort of like formulaic aspect to it. Mm-hmm. And I'll always think of Scream when Matthew Lillard or whatever is like talking about, well, and then this happens and then you're like, no, that's kind of, you have to have that kind of rough construct, you know, like Cabin in the Woods is that simple idea, people in the cabin, but it's like, but there's a whole bunch of other shit going on.
Right.
And it's like, oh, okay. And it's,
I love Cabin in the Woods.
Yeah, I think that's fantastic. Yeah.
What do you got, Square?
You know, I mentioned it earlier, but I'll say it again, man. John Carpenter's The Thing, man.
Yeah,
I love that movie.
Yeah.
I mean, like, that movie was just pure. If I can speak French, pure what the fuck.
Yeah.
Because, I mean.
That was a great movie.
Yeah.
What did you think of the one a couple years ago?
It fucking blew my ass.
I thought it was
all
right.
I was so disappointed.
Really?
So I was, yeah. I mean,
I thought it was fine.
Really?
I
liked it a little begrudgingly. I had to go see it to support Mary Elizabeth Winstead. She's a local girl, done good. So it's like, I got to see everything she's in.
I just didn't see the point of it. I didn't see the point of making it. I mean,
it was a prequel right up until the point where the helicopter yeah, starts in the original.
It was like a direct prequel.
And
like,
at the end, you get the other camp, right? Yeah. Yeah. And I just didn't really see the point of it. I mean, that's just my opinion.
I agree. I mean, like, it was a pointless prequel, and it kind of betrays some of the impressions of Carpenter's film. I don't think it really helped or aided anything or even fleshed anything out. Yeah. Like, you know, but no, that first one, man, I mean, it's a typical, I love John Carpenter.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, just that cast of just like,
the musical score was so good in that too. Like that electronic kind of sounding thing.
Yeah. But you know, like, yeah, Carpenter gets those, like Carpenter would hire like just really ugly guys, unattractive men to be in it. See, that's when Hollywood, you could be all right looking and be a movie star.
Yeah.
You know, but there are all these tough, rugged guys, and they are just up against something that, you know, they are out of their depth, out of their element, and they are so screwed. And the paranoia, and it's just a gross movie.
Yeah. The thing really, you know, got the sense of being alone.
Yes.
You are alone up there. Yes. There is no 911 you can call. Mm-hmm. You are alone out there.
And
I think that's the scariest part of it.
Yeah, and then that ending, man, it is just, no matter how you interpret it, it is so damn bleak.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I like that. I mean, I like horror movies more with a, you know, they're just, it's pure horror all the way through the end. Like, there is no happy ending. Like, it's, you just,
yeah,
it's real life.
I think that's the best feeling for me leaving a horror movie, is like when I like leave the theater and I'm like, there's no point in living, you know?
is that what you thought last night?
yeah, we were talking. I saw Tusk last night, man. I was really underwhelmed by it.
Yeah.
I wanted to like it. You know, I ain't gonna tell any of you folks listening to not go see it. If you want to support Kevin Smith, go right ahead.
I'll wait for Netflix.
Yeah. Which is what I should have done. Yeah, or the bargain bin at Walmart.
Yeah, there you go.
You know.
You kind of broke my heart.
I'm sorry, man. That's sad. I didn't mean to.
Well, man, I think this is pretty much going to wrap up this episode. I'd like to thank our guests, Jason Leonard and Daniel Herzog. And look at this. One of the first No Big Twos where we really didn't talk about Marvel or DC.
But we didn't talk about comics much either.
We talked plenty about comics and Image and Dark Horse. We didn't even talk about Constantine.
No, oh, the TV show?
Yeah, and how
I didn't even watch it.
Nah. You, come on. Nah. At least he's British and blonde and maybe smokes.
I didn't dislike the Keanu Reeves movie all that much. Other than Keanu being in it, I thought Constantine's like, oh, God. That's the only thing that's wrong with that movie. It's just him. The Keanu-sized hole in that movie.
Dude, it's worth it. Anyway, thank you guys for coming on the show. Thank you. How'd you like it?
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I was going to say, after our last one with Sandy, that is the only complaint I have about these podcasts. We do not get to talk long enough. Like, it's like when the conversation gets going really good, man, it's like, oh, we got to stop.
We got to warm up and then,
there's so much good stuff that happens before.
That's true.
And this is more afterwards, but that's my only complaint. It's not longer.
Well, maybe the next one. We could do it again. I don't know. Maybe get a little more regular with this show.
Yeah.
All right.
I'm game. Yeah.
Cool. Just sitting back shooting the shit. Yeah. I do want to apologize to the audience for being so foul mouthed, but.
Oh.
They're cool. They can hang. All right, everybody. Have a good week.